It is my pleasure to present...
Good morning and welcome to the Carmichael Dave Show, starring Carmichael Dave, Jay Mars, and your phone calls on the Fire Wings hotline at 1-800-920-1140. Text in on the Jiffy Loop text line at 44-1140. Now, strap in and sit down.
To the bomb, man!
Here's Carmichael Dave.
All right, a lot of texts at 916-339-1140 about the soccer talk. That's a sentence I've never said. A lot of people asking, what can they do? What can they do to boot fans? You boot fans and prosecute them. You have cameras on every section. It's not easy, but it's not overly complicated. You have extra security, and the whole time, they're just simply, you see the Kings games. Next time you go to a Kings game, look at security when the game's going on, and for most other cases. When the game's going on, the security is facing the crowd. Each security member has a section throughout the entire building. And when the game is at a timeout or a commercial break, you see security go on the court, and they have their hands behind their back or right in front of them, clasped, and they're looking right at the court. And just a personal anecdote as to how awesome these people are, I've gotten through the years to know most of the security people at the Kings games, and I've also through the years also known one thing as well. They are so nice and sweet and affable. You can talk to them. They're great. You don't talk to them during timeouts because they're looking at the court and they will not pay attention to you. And if they do answer you, it's one of those, let me give you a quick answer. I got a job to do. They take it very seriously. You put cameras in. You put more security in. And you make sure that you advertise everyone who's arrested, who they are, what they are, what they do, blah, 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 you know, what they're all about. It will slowly but surely turn the tide. It's not going to, you're always going to have dum-dums. You're always, always going to have dum-dums. By the way, to Earl saying it was a soft plastic bottle. People, you can jump off a bridge and you'll be fine. It's just water.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Doesn't hurt. It's
no,
soft.
Nah, it's fine.
Wet. If it's wet, how?
Yeah. You know, medicine balls, they're soft.
They are. Fact. If you ever touch the outside of a medicine ball, it's nice and smooth.
Yeah. All right. So anyways, let's figure that part out. Let's just figure that out. I've got a trivia question for you. I want to run by you there, Jay. This basketball player, in his career, missed more than 9,000 shots.
Mm-hmm.
Lost over 300 games.
Mm-hmm.
Missed the game winner 26 times in his career. Who is it?
Michael Jordan?
Yeah, it's Michael Jordan.
Yeah, there's a lot of posters with all those stats on it with his face. I actually have one, believe it or not. I swear to God, I have that poster.
I really like that angle. I really like that angle. I do.
It's called You Have to Fail to Win.
I love the message. What a loser. He choked on the game-winning shot 26 times.
Context is everything, isn't it?
Do you have any idea how long it would take just to watch a clip? Wouldn't even be a clip. It'd be a movie of Michael Jordan missing 9,000 shots. 300 games that he's lost. That's almost four full seasons of going 0-82.
Mm-hmm.
Yet somehow he's considered the greatest ever.
Again, context matters. I only say that because context increasingly gets lost in this day and age.
We like
to decontextualize things to make arguments that, you know, either suit our own beliefs or just so we can be contrarian.
Right. Because it's fun.
It is fun, right? It's fun to be the woke guy, the smart guy, the I see everything you don't see guy. That's fun.
I've got a different angle. We talked about the Mayweather-Logan-Paul fight.
Logan-Paul.
And I think we both were on the same page that it was a total farce, but hey, we're kind of here, you know, go for it.
We're also, I think, kind of on the same page, like, hey, you know, boxing has kind of been farce-like for quite some time.
Farce-ish?
Farshishian.
John Rahm had a 6-stroke lead, which I believe tied him for the 54-hole record at the Memorial Tournament put on by Jack Nicklaus, the Cicadas, and the state of Ohio.
I always find it weird we call it the Memorial. Like, it makes me think Jack's dead.
Right, right. What,
Jack's not dead.
And Jack's actually won this tournament before that is his. But here's what I don't get.
Should you be able to do that into your own tournament?
I don't like it. Here's what I do wonder, though. I know there's like a real easy answer here that's dumb, and I'm forgetting it. Should the Memorial Tournament be on Memorial Weekend?
I mean, that would make sense, except again.
Right?
Yeah, I get you.
I'm with you. Why would you? Is it because I'm pretty sure there's a golf tournament on Memorial Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it like the Valspar or something, or I don't know, whatever.
Again,
the hell?
If it's not one of the majors, unless you're a golf head.
I'm a golf head.
You are.
John Rahm had a giant lead and then was given what looked to be devastating news. It was a very weird and surreal moment on the golf course. And before we move on, because we already spent a lot of time on this earlier, but it is a big story. Here's what it says.
Again, 2:30 special start time tomorrow, live tomorrow. Jack, look forward to sharing it once again with you, the final round here on CBS.
Thank you, Jim.
Rahm's getting the news right now.
What's going on here? Somebody just gave John some news. This is not good. And we have no idea, folks. We have no idea. We just passed along some information, and you could see just instant devastation.
That's Jim Nance, Nick Faldo on the call, too. They had no idea what was going on. I also, we talked about... Obviously, well, not obviously, but the speculation here is that because of the type of contact tracing he was in, it's not the same contact tracing you would put somebody who is vaccinated in per PGA rules. So the overwhelming thought is that John Rahm had not been vaccinated. So he had to withdraw. He tested positive for COVID-19. That's what happened there with a 6-stroke lead. We pointed out that had he shot 4 over yesterday, he still would have won the tournament. Patrick Cantlay ended up beating Colin Morikawa in a playoff. And we did ask, you know, why couldn't he have just, I mean, again, I'm sure there might be a good reason, but why couldn't he have played a onesome with masks on and teed off? You know, you do wish there was a way to make it happen. I'm pretty sure Cantlay and Morikawa didn't want to win and play second like that, but the check still cashed.
Yeah, I was going to say Morikawa also, what, 1.6 million? I think Morikawa is fine with it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I think Morikawa is more than okay with it. I don't think Morikawa feels bad for John Rahm. Nor should anyone feel bad for John Rahm.
Why do you say that about Morikawa, though?
Because at the end of the day, he is there to win the tournament.
If the
guy's going to bounce, it's not.
It was Cantlay that won the tournament. That's why I was confused. Yeah. I got you. You're probably right, and that's on Rahm, who's apparently still doing research. I don't know what that is. I don't know why you'd put yourself in that spot, but it is what it is what it is. So that was an interesting thing that happened in the world of golf, and a very unfortunate thing that happened in the world of golf. We also had NBA playoffs we'll get to in just a second, but the big football trade over the weekend, the Atlanta Falcons get the second-round pick in 2022 and a fourth-round pick in 2023 from the Titans. The Falcons send Julio Jones in a sixth-round pick to Tennessee, which now pits Julio Jones and A.J. Brown across from each other. I'm really excited.
Oh, they still have Derrick Henry in the backfield, by the way. He's
good.
Yeah,
and not for nothing, but Julio Jones isn't exactly a tiny little speedster. Julio Jones is a brick.
He's a large man.
He is a large man. I don't care if he's 32 years old. He's a large man.
He still commands a defense to pay attention to him, put it that way.
So it's not like he didn't have Calvin Ridley and other receivers in Atlanta. So I'm not here to say, well, Julio Jones won't see a double coverage all year long. I'm sure, though. But if you're a defensive coordinator now going against the Titans, I don't know what the hell you do.
I think Brown is probably the first guy you double.
I would agree.
It's going to be fun to watch Julio Jones then open in single coverage, isn't it?
So you're going to have to double Brown, which is going to free up Jones. Oh, and by the way, if they can just get – here's the fun part. It's not so much what Brown is going to do for you. It's not what Jones is going to do, although they will do things. It's What B or C level third receiver is going to have a monster year for the Titans next year? Because they're going to be 20 yards down the field every snap, like mm-hmm. without anyone around them for 10 yards going, hey, I'm covered by a linebacker.
Is Ryan Tannehill the quarterback? Like, and I, no disrespect to Tannehill. Tannehill is a good quarterback. But this dude is getting paid because, let's face it, they are putting the right pieces around him, and he just knows how to use them. Like, Ryan Tannehill is not a top five quarterback. I wouldn't even know if you put Tannehill top 10 quarterback.
Sure, you wouldn't.
But, man, when you put the right guy, it just goes to show when it talks about the importance of the quarterback position. When you have a line and you have weapons both in the backfield and at the receiving position, the average quarterback can be great. They really can. Imagine if you swap Tannehill off the Titans and put Derek Carr on the Titans.
Oh, how freaking
good of a season does Derek Carr have next year?
Well, I don't know, because you'd have to throw downfield then.
I think he can do that with those guys.
Yeah, I think so.
I think the idea that Derek Carr can't throw the ball downfield,
that's the thing.
He's not exactly Jeff George.
Right.
He's also not Mr. Checkdown.
Right. That is funny. Here's a question. Where does that receiving core rank for you now?
Oh, man. I guess Julio's kind of a question mark, right? Because of health and age. There's a little bit there. Two or three? I don't know if they're better than Seattle. Seattle still has a great receiving core.
You got Lockett and Metcalf.
You have to start at 1 year. Lockett and Metcalf or Jones and Brown?
What about Tampa Bay?
Tampa's pretty damn good, too. That's why I said there might be two or three.
And I'm only saying this, and I'm not even suggesting it. I'm asking, is the receiving core in Tennessee better than the receiving core in San Francisco?
Yeah, right now they are, for sure.
As a whole,
right now.
And I'm including George Kittle in there.
It's tough to say just because Ayuk and Deebo Samuel both had injury issues.
Yeah.
You know, over 16 games, who knows right now? I'm still going to go with what I know in Brown and Jones right now. That could change literally 3 weeks into the season.
What about Dallas?
They're better than Dallas. They're better than CeeDee and Amari.
Okay.
I think we don't talk about how good A.J. Brown is enough just because he played in Tennessee.
I am an A.J.
A.J. Brown's a monster,
I'm with
dude.
You, dude. I'm with you on A.J. Brown. I've said, I think he, it's so funny. I think A.J. Brown has the potential to be to receivers what Derrick Henry is to running backs. They're both similar enough in the sense that A.J. Brown can just brutalize players. Brutalize them. Like Derrick Henry. And the thing about Tennessee that's going to be crazy next year is, and it's where Henry really eats his lunch, is in the fourth quarter of games when they've been going at it
mm-hmm.
for 45 minutes, and that secondary and that defensive line is starting to wear down. And if you're going to double Brown, and you're going to then have guys cheating over for Jones, well, guess what that does if Derrick Henry breaks through? As a matter of fact, go ahead.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, see ya. I mean, the only thing I could think is maybe it helps defend Derrick Henry because you're going to have to put so many people downfield to help with Jones and Brown that maybe now if Derrick Henry does break through that first line of demarcation, there's more people back there to help with him. But then you're going to, then Tennessee can just pick off first downs all over the place and Tannehill can just dink and dunk his way down to 7 points.
Yeah.
And they'll just dominate time of possession.
Do you know who's breathing a sigh of relief? And it's going to kind of seem funny, but hear me out. Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch.
Think so?
Well, there was a thought that the Seahawks were the team that was going to get Julio Jones. And I don't think they wanted to see Julio Jones in the NFC West. With that core of receivers already and just how good that Seahawks offense was last year despite having the carousel of running backs, you didn't want to see Julio Jones added to that offense.
No.
And so him going to the AFC South versus the NFC West is I think the biggest win is that the 49ers could have pulled something off, but I think they were looking at it and they didn't want to play cap gymnastics over the next couple of years because that would have really hampered them. the next best scenario is he goes as far away from you as possible.
I thought you were actually saying it was breathing a sigh of relief because they don't have him.
No, no, no. It's because
the money that comes with it.
He didn't end up in Seattle. I think that, yeah, they, again, I don't think they wanted to commit long-term to that money. They're already going to be, you know, cap strapped, so to speak, over the next couple years, and I get it. There's a lot of different gymnastics you can do to open up cap space in the NFL. We all know that.
Does this make Tennessee a significantly better team?
Yeah.
Does this make them a threat to the Chiefs?
I'm not willing to go that far yet. Okay. With the season not starting.
Okay, but threat, and again,
I will say they are a top team in the AFC.
I agree.
I think they could go toe-to-toe with KC.
I very much agree with you that preseason rankings in the NFL are almost completely worthless.
I think preseason rankings in the NFL are more worthless than draft grades.
I agree with you because of what we see every year. But let me ask you, let's put Kansas City aside.
Sure.
Let's put Kansas City aside, the class of the AFC, until mm-hmm. somebody knocks them off. Well, we have Tennessee, Baltimore, yep. Buffalo.
Pittsburgh. You got to throw Pittsburgh in there. Are they better than Buffalo on paper?
Are we ready to throw Miami in there?
Not yet.
Are we ready to throw Cleveland in there?
Cleveland, I need to see it happen more than one season.
So the big four are the Bills, Ravens, Steelers, Titans. So we're not throwing the Colts in there?
The Colts, again, everything out of Colts OTAs right now is... Oh, Carson Wentz looks great. Carson Wentz, Carson Wentz, Carson Wentz. I'm not ready to go there yet.
Okay. All right. So the big four are the Bills, the Steelers, the Ravens, and the Titans. And where do the Titans rank in that big four?
They're better than the Steelers, in my opinion. They're not as good as KC yet. I think they're better than Baltimore. I don't know if they're better than Buffalo.
The AFC is really, really impressing.
It's strong.
And
very
because
top
we're
heavy.
Also not talking about Cleveland.
Right.
We're also not talking, like we said, about Indianapolis mm-hmm. yet. Who knows what the hell the Raiders will do?
Not much.
Notice we haven't, you know, we're not talking about Miami, which is absolutely on the up.
They're on the up, but that too, a question mark.
Yeah, I agree.
It's going to be, that to me is one of the more underrated storylines. I know it's getting some run, obviously, but Miami could either be really, really freaking good if Tua goes in and performs, or they could be the biggest disappointment in the AFC, in my opinion. Because I think there's a lot of people that have high expectations on Miami. To your point, it's all gonna hang on Tua.
I mean, they certainly, yeah, I agree with you. They're certainly on the up. They're certainly on the up and up.
But what's the ceiling there? And again, the ceiling depends on Tua. That's the conversation that's going to be had in Miami all year. Because if he goes out there and he's great, man, the Finns should be really good. But there's going to be a lot of head scratching going on, especially after what we saw last year and what he admitted to, even though Brian Flores this weekend came out and tried to, like, you know, throw a little water on that fire, basically, like, you know, the quote was exaggerated. I don't think it was. I don't think he was ready to go in last year. And I think that's why you had players at the end of the season leaking stuff to the Miami Herald saying, hey, Tua ain't that dude.
Meanwhile, in Green Bay,
the stalemate continues.
Packers president Mark Murphy wrote in his monthly column on the team website. That's interesting. The situation we face with Aaron Rodgers has divided our fan base. The emails and the letters I've received reflect this fact. We have been working with Rodgers and his agent, David Dunn, for several months. He essentially confirmed Adam Schefter's report that he, general manager Brian Gutekunst, and coach Matt LaFleur all made separate trips to meet with Rodgers throughout the offseason, and the team is very much aware of Aaron's concerns. Murphy said, we are committed to Aaron in 2021 and beyond. How about this? Do you think Mark Murphy listens to the show? We are working to resolve the situation and realize that the less both sides say publicly, the better. Mark, I agree with you.
Yeah.
You should remind your GM and coach that they don't have to talk all the time. And then, by the way, call Jed York and tell him the same thing. And I don't like that he said both sides, though. And it's a tiny little thing, but I don't like that.
Why?
Because I think when you say both sides, you're continuing the whole adversarial relationship, as in there's our side and his side. Instead of, and again, I know that I'm being nitpicky here, but just from a PR standpoint, I think something better would say, you know, people keep asking me about what both sides have to say. I don't consider it both sides. I consider it one side. We are Green Bay Packers, as is Aaron Rodgers. He is part of the family, and families have disagreements, but in the end, they're all trying to do the same thing.
This will lead more credence to kind of why Rodgers is upset, though.
I think probably it is.
Because he's trying to basically, when you have the owner trying to divide it.
Right.
And then say, well, it's his fault, the division's here,
right,
guys. No, it's not.
No,
it's not his fault.
Listen, it's not like Aaron Rodgers. And yes, Aaron Rodgers can be persnickety. I get it. But it's not like he woke up one day and went, you know, I'm just going to screw around.
Dare I say Aaron Rodgers has earned the right to be a little persnickety here and there?
I think he has.
I think three MVP awards coming off your best season at age 37 or 38, practically the same thing. Yeah, you've earned that right to question things a little bit. And when your GM goes out and makes the moves that they have made, a.k.a. not get him a whole lot of help, I think it leads to further criticism that is warranted.
I agree. I think he has the right. One note on the NBA playoffs. The Nets, we haven't talked much about them. I will say, pretty impressed by the Nets and the fact that they were able to win Game 1, beat Milwaukee without James Harden. Say what you want about James Harden, but that's a massive hole you've got to fill and an adjustment you have to make. Now, you have, Kyrie Irving there to take over point guard duties, so that's neat.
Kevin Durant's pretty good, too.
Yeah. But they were
basketball's
able,
well.
They were able to win, and Giannis put up some great numbers too. But they were able to win. Harden now out in game two. This is being classified as a hamstring strain. You asked in our notes here, Jay, is this a must win for Milwaukee? And I know where you're coming from. If they lose two games to the Nets without James Harden, and then he comes back in game three, I get it. But then I just keep thinking, you know, it's not a series until the home team loses a game.
Right.
If they come out of Brooklyn down 2-0, that means they came out of Brooklyn down 2-0. Now, if they lose in Milwaukee, now we have a problem. It's very difficult for me to see Milwaukee winning this series. We've learned in almost every case in the NBA, time and time again, the team that has the most healthy talent on the floor. In other words, I think if you have the two most talented guys on the floor, but the other team is a better team, it's the team with the two most. How many times did we see Shaq and Kobe win and beat other teams that were clearly better 1-10, 1-12?
But that's why I hate the term must win, especially in a seven-game series when only one game has been played.
Right, exactly.
However, if you're going to win a title, if you're Milwaukee, you have to take advantage of every gift you are given in the playoffs. James Harden's hamstring, as much as it sucks,
right,
while I'm no Harden fan, I just don't like seeing, especially star. I mean, I don't like seeing anyone hurt.
Of course.
But stars in the playoffs, that's what you want. Brooklyn, you have a gift now if you're Milwaukee. You are minus one of the top five players in the NBA. You have to take advantage of that. Not only that, because one, just on the, you know, on the peripheral, if James Harden's missing, we should win the ballgame. We are that talented enough.
Right.
You want to go in Milwaukee with a tie series. You need that home court advantage.
Sure.
Again, if you are going to win a championship, you need to take advantage. If you don't, I'm sorry. This Milwaukee team is not going to win a title, in my opinion.
Well, and now you look. I mean, listen, game one's here. But my gosh, could you imagine if they end up going, if the road for the Nets to the finals ends up being, If it ends up being Boston, Milwaukee, Atlanta,
which is in play,
and then they end up facing like a Jazz or a Suns team, that's like the weirdest road to a championship ever.
It's a very strange road because, I mean, I think the Jazz are a little better than Milwaukee, but you could also make the argument Milwaukee might be the tougher out just because of Giannis.
Sure. And also, back to their earlier point, Milwaukee has the better player.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry,
overall star.
Sorry, Mitchell. Sorry, Gobert. But Giannis is better. Anyways, a lot to talk about. And Suns, Nuggets, game one tonight. We'll also get to that and what's on tap a little bit later. We'll take a break right now. I promise we will.
Work.
Yeah! That was nice.
Coming up next.
Stupid technology.
Ed Crane will join us for the final news and notes of the day. And we got a Once in a Blue Moon with Jay Mars. And Reebok is for sale.
Yes, I'm going to buy.
With an incredibly interesting caveat to this sale as well. We'll tell you about it next.
The highest rated morning show on KHTK. The Carmichael Dave Show returns now.
Welcome back in. Final half hour of the program. Jay Mars, Carmichael Dave. How are you? Jim Rome is next. Followed by Jason and Doug. Colin Cowherd prior to that. Right here on the old program.
After Jason and Doug?
No, before Jason. So goes.
No, I'm saying after. What's after them today?
Oh, yeah, the baseball.
Very good.
Yeah, the A's. We'll get to that once on tap. I wanted to tease.
Oh, you can tease it twice.
Yeah. The 49ers make a minor move. Tony Jefferson, veteran safety, formerly the Ravens, has been picked up. And I've got a couple of notes here. That's kind of why I'm stumbling into this segment. Sorry. There's news today. The Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona, has told ESPN that transgender girls have a, quote, right to compete, and suggested that the Biden administration will step in to protect those students' civil rights as multiple states enact legislation banning transgender athletes from competing in girls and women's sports. And I've been asked why. Listen, that is a highly charged, highly political topic, and I get asked enough to where I'm bringing it up. Hey, why don't you talk about it? It's one of my quiet projects on the side, but what I ultimately kind of want to do is, because it's such a highly charged issue, but it does have to do with sports, so it is in our lane, if you will, I don't want to have one guest on until I can have two guests on, and I want to have somebody who can explain why these judgments are coming through and why it's fair what's going on versus somebody who is a proponent of some of the states and what they're doing to limit these rights. I want to get the sides. This is one of those times where I may not agree with, but I see the sides, and I want people to make their own decisions. But mostly I want people, including myself, first and foremost, to be educated on it. Because I've run into some hurdles on this. When I first started talking about it years ago, it was pretty cut and dry to me. Like for a lot of people, I was like, well, hold on a second. If your bone density and everything is male and you compete as a female, that's got to be dangerous to other females, especially in any contact sport. You know, I don't think it's very controversial, and I don't think anyone should take offense to the fact that as a rule generally, of course with exceptions, but if you put 100 average guys into, or top of the line athletes that are male in an arm wrestling contest, and 100 top female athletes in a wrestling contest, the guys are going to win pretty much 100 out of 100 times, just base strength, science. But then I got stopped, and I love it when this happens, and I got educated a little bit by some people in the that know what they're talking about, saying you don't understand what goes through with testosterone therapy, estrogen therapy, things that go into this, the rules and everything, the way it's set up. And I think it's okay for sports hosts. I think it's okay for anybody in media to say, I don't know enough about this to have a hot take. And I especially don't like hot taking when real lives are being affected. And this is a very hot button subject, a very passionate subject for people. So my long-winded answer to you all is it's not easy to find experts, by the way, and not just experts, but I also don't want to bring somebody on here. I need to find the tougher part, Jay, is finding the guest that is the proponent of the rules barring transgender athletes from competing, because not only do I have to find somebody that can coherently explain that side from a logic point of view, it can't be a kook or a wacko. I don't want to bring somebody on the station, give them a platform to spew all kinds of homophobic crap. I need to find, from a medical point of view, how people are making these arguments, from a logic point of view, and I need your beliefs and your your feelings out of it. I need facts. That's how I want to present it. So working on it, not avoiding the topic, just want to do it the right way. In the meantime, once in a blue moon right now.
Once in a blue moon, brought to you by Blue Moon Beer. Here's Jay Mars.
Get this. The NBA went to the 8-team format in 1984. The 8 remaining teams in the NBA playoffs have not won an NBA title since the league went to the 8-team format per conference in 1984.
Wow.
Now, of those 8 teams, 5 have never won an NBA title. That'd be the Clippers, mm-hmm. the Jazz, mm-hmm. the Nets, yeah. the Nuggets, and the Suns.
Okay.
The Hawks last won the NBA title in 1958, which I believe they were in St. Louis.
That was the year Jason Ross was born to us.
Jason Ross actually, Jason was doing play-by-play for them.
Was he?
Yeah. The Bucks last won the title in 1971 with Oscar Robertson, and I believe he was still Lou Alcindor at that time.
I think he was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
And the Sixers, coincidentally, won the last NBA title. 83. Pre-16-team format.
Yes, Moses Malone,
fo.
I remember that. I don't remember it like that.
Yes, you do. You
I
were
was a
like
baby.
20.
No, I wasn't.
You were.
Don't spread lies.
I'm not spreading anything. That's not family friendly.
You're not spreading anything.
No.
Not what I've heard from people who've dated you. All right, so
okay, that was different.
It's like you're just gonna let that go.
No, I was thinking like context is everything. I'll leave it at that.
So Adidas has put Reebok up for sale.
Sounds hilarious, doesn't it?
Raise your hand if you knew that Adidas owned Reebok. You did?
Yeah.
Well, of course you did. Whoever buys Reebok has a very interesting clause in the contract. Now, you're familiar, Jay, with the Bobby Bonilla, what is it, every June something? Mm-hmm. Or, he goes and he
I've heard of that thing before.
Yeah. This one,
I think we even talked about it on the show once.
This one's almost better. I love this clause. So whoever buys Reebok is going to have quite the bill to pay in 9 years. Because as a clause from the original contract, they're going to have to write a check for $32 million to Allen Iverson on the day he turns 55. That was part of the lifetime deal he signed with Reebok in 2001.
Also, happy birthday, Allen Iverson.
Happy birthday, Allen Iverson.
46 years young today.
And 9 years from now, $35 million.
That's one instance. I know Allen has had a lot of instances where he had a guy take care of him after. Saw something and Allen was like, yeah, I need to take care of this guy's money post-career because I know he got a – I don't think it was from the Sixers, but I know he's gotten payouts in his 40s. Like when he turned 40, he got a payout or a sum of money that was coming to him, whether it was put in a savings. I don't remember the full story. But, yeah, someone down the line was really looking out for AI's money post-NBA career.
And good. Now, one thing I wonder, I don't know, I assume Allen's doing okay financially.
Seems to be.
I hope so.
Put it this way, if Allen was really struggling financially, I think it would have already been a story.
Well, and here's the thing, though. Here's what I wonder. If you're Allen Iverson, and let's just say he was struggling financially, I wonder how easy it is for you to borrow against that $35
million. Mm.
Like, if you wanted to take a $2 million loan and pay it back in 9 years, what's the charge on that? You know it's guaranteed.
Sure.
Speaking of birthdays, this is a bittersweet, but 63 years old today would have been Prince Rogers Nelson. Can I just say that Prince has been gone from us for a little bit now, but in my mind's eye. Like, if I can just shut off the fact that he's gone and pretend he's still with us, I would be blown away that he's 63 years old.
And, you thought he was older or
younger,
thought he was younger?
Younger. Not. I didn't think he would have been 29.
Because he's a little guy.
I guess I just...
Had some work done.
It's just impossible to think of Prince. It really is the... it's a deeper conversation. We don't have time to go, but there's nothing good that comes out of talent being robbed from us way too soon, and more importantly, robbed from their families. But there's an immortalization that happens
sure.
that, for example, Elvis didn't have. You hear the jokes about Elvis all the time and his late Vegas years and blah, blah, blah. Prince, MJ, Michael Jackson, to Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, Chris Cornell, they'll never be seen that way. They almost immortal become immortalized when they're taken from us too soon. And I got to be honest with you. I'd much rather have it the Elvis way. Not the end of the Elvis way, but I'm saying I would love to have seen Kurt Cobain playing XYZ Casino or whatever it would have been. I mean, I don't know. But I'd much rather have seen that. And God forbid, Chris Cornell, I wished he'd lived to be 100. So Prince today, 60, would have been 63 years old, and we honor him, and we miss the heck out of him. We'll take a break.
Yeah! That was nice!
Coming up next.
All right, final segment of the program, What's on Tap, and we will get and we will ask a crossover right after this.
Yeah, let's go, come on!
Uh-huh. It's What's on Tap. Here's what you need to know, what you need to watch, what you need to follow today. It's What's on Tap. Brought to you by.
I turned on the wrong mic. The Pauls. Logan and brother.
Brought to you by.
Chris Paul.
Silence. Not only is the music not playing, there it goes.
Whoops.
But Jay turned on the wrong mic.
It happens. Hey, it's Monday. Sometimes you get a case of it. You know what? Actually, screw the Paul brothers. Today, brought to you by Monday.
Monday. Hey, listen, on Mondays, you talk about the Paul brothers, especially when one of them fights Floyd Mayweather the day before in a fight in which most people didn't get to watch it, or many, because the Showtime service crashed. That was neat. By the way, if you're just tuning in, if you bought the fight, I can tell you from personal experience, if you bought the fight and Showtime crashed, which they did, if you bought it through your Fire Stick, at least, like I did, just go on the Amazon customer service, go into the chat, and a quick five-minute conversation will get you refunded. A lot of people looking to get their money refunded today. Also should point out the John Rahm story about him having to withdraw. There were three different huge sports books. I forget their names. I should probably pump them up. But that counted it as a win if you had bet on John Rahm. That's a nice gesture, I guess. Anyways, the Paul brothers, they're rich. Get you some today. Today, NBA playoffs. Game 2. Bucks, Nets. Brooklyn favored by just 1.5.
That's not too surprising.
Interesting.
Bucks are going to make some adjustments. At least you would hope.
Sure.
No James Harden for four quarters.
But no.
But it's in Brooklyn. They have a 1-0 lead. They have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving.
No James Harden on Saturday, and they won by 8.
Hey,
and
again.
Don't you think the Nets are going to be able to make some adjustments knowing now sure. that they don't have Harden?
Right, but I think that it's an easier adjustment to make if you're the Bucks than it is the Nets. I still think the Nets pull it out tonight.
Ew. That game at 4:30.
Why is that you? That's called being responsible.
Nuggets and Suns. The MVP versus Devin Booker and friends. 7 o'clock, Valley of the Sun. Phoenix favored by 5.
Hmm. Wow.
I think Nuggets are going to win this series.
Really?
I do. I think the Nuggets are going to win.
Mr. Sun.
I think the Nuggets are going to win this
Phoenix
series.
Phoenix Suns fan Carmichael Dave? Not taking his son. Interesting.
When did that happen?
Have you been kind of championing the Suns all year?
I'm not championing the Suns.
Are you kind of rooting for them?
My championing, if you take that of the Suns, is not championing the Suns. It's championing a perennially crappy team that has gone from not making the playoffs to the 2 seed.
You're avoiding my question.
So it's through the Kings. I'm
Yeah, that's fine.
Any love for the Suns? So am I rooting for them? I would like to see them win this series.
So you're rooting for them?
It's tough to say rooting because I'm not going to be there in a jersey. I'm not going to be cheering for them.
You don't have to be.
I'm just saying if you asked me who would I rather win this series, I'd say the Suns.
Okay.
In fact, if you asked me who I'd like to see win the whole thing, I'd probably say the Suns.
Suns fan Carmichael Dave. There you go.
By the way, you led me into a bad place, dude.
Not the first person to ever say that.
Following Jason and Doug, there will be no A's because there's no A's game today.
As yep.
A matter of fact, there's only 3 games in all of baseball today. Marlins, Sox.
Rejoice, America.
Royals, Angels, Cubs, Padres.
Ooh, Royals, Angels.
This time it's for real.
Cubs Padres is good.
Yeah. Cubs were in first place until the Giants took care of them.
Yeah. Took a big step into keeping first place in the NL West. It's amazing.
I tweeted yesterday.
I don't care what you say. I know it's June 7th. It's amazing they're still in first place.
It is amazing. It's just still background noise until
when they win the World Series. I'm going to hate it.
The Giants?
Yes. They do dumb things. They literally won three World Series for no reason.
Dumb.
So was them winning three World Series. That was really shouldn't have happened.
Oh, let's put up Travis Ishikawa. He'll put one into the bay.
Well, of course.
We all saw that one coming.
It was a great move.
Cody Ross, best baseball player ever in 2010. So dumb. Pat the Bat.
Yeah, don't forget about Pat Burrell.
Aubrey Huff.
Okay, let's just not even talk about Aubrey Huff. Aubrey Huff's like literally top 10 worst human ever in sports.
Two-time San Francisco Giant World Series champion, Aubrey Huff.
Not a huge fan of that. I mean, what are you going to do? Aubrey Huff just sucks. You got me. I got some ding-dong that is now blocked on social media. I was tweeting out yesterday that I love sports. You had the ending of the play, you know, NBA playoff games that ran into each other. You had the Memorial playoff. Then you had the U.S. Women's Open playoff. Lexi Thompson completely choked down the stretch. You had, I forget which one it was. I think it was supposed to be Alabama and Florida State Women's College World Series softball. And then
Florida State's still in the Men's World Series. You're right. They won. Yeah.
Well, they're regionals right now. Okay. They're not good. Anyways, and someone was like, this, that. Oh, and then went to the Giants-Cubs at the end of that game. And they said a bunch of other crap, but then they were like, nobody cares about women's sports. And like, listen, I'm not the guy that's going to shove women's sports or anything down your throat. You like what you like, you like what you don't like. Let me just say this. The U.S. Women's Open yesterday and the Women's College Softball World Series, If you don't watch stuff like that because you just, and I'm talking to you, yes, you, if you're just like, the women, WNBA, like whatever, fine. I don't watch WNBA. I've talked about this publicly before. It's okay to not like things, but you're missing out. I'm just here to tell you, women's college softball is awesome. It is so entertaining. It is 100% entertaining, and I wish I would love to see. There's got to be. I guarantee you, there's a professional women's softball league that's set up like the college, you know, just with pros. Like, how is that not on TV more? I'm here for it. It is so fast, so fun, and when you look at somebody tweeted out a bunch of overlays of this one pitcher. What is her name? Fouts, something Fouts. It's an awesome name. And, dude, like, it was three different pitches, like you see with major league pitchers where it'll show their fastball, curveball, and slider, and the overlay will show the pitches thrown at the same time and then where they end up. Same motion, three vastly different locations. They showed this pitcher's three different pitches. One was, like, rising up. The other one was riding in on the bat, and the other one was low and away. Same motion, that double under. Have you ever tried to pitch a softball that way before?
I have not.
I have, just to do it. I have no idea how they do it.
Years of training.
Well, yes. But, dude, to do that whole thing where you, like, circle your arm underhanded twice and fire a softball with any form of speed and accuracy, not to mention movement on it. And, I mean, there are dingers hit. Mm-hmm. There are some awesome, awesome defensive plays. Like, if I'm just here to tell you, the Women's College World Series is going right now. Next time you see it, I think it's on ESPN2. Next time you see it come across your screen, just give it an inning or two. And if you still don't like it, that's fine. And then, by the way, the U.S. Women's Open yesterday, which if you like golf, you like golf, period. Lexi Thompson, I hate to say it because I'm a huge fan of hers, and I think she's very, very, can be very, very good for the sport in general. But, ooh, boy, had a golf ball in her throat yesterday towards the end.
There. Happens.
Oh, it does. It does happen, man. It does happen. But anyways, I had fun.
Good.
I
glad you enjoyed your Sunday.
I just don't understand people. The more sports I can get into, the better. That just means there's more stuff on.
Yeah. More stuff to, what's the word? Distract us. Is that
consume?
What we like to, yes. That the word we like to use when we talk sports or distraction?
Yes.
Damn it. Let me be distracted in peace.
Right. I watch
cornhole. Twitter guy.
I love cornhole tournaments.
That's just weird.
They're showing more. Do you ever play cornhole?
Yeah, it's fun to play.
You don't think it's amazing to watch these people play cornhole? Oh, my God. First off, they're further away than any of us are from the boards. Trust me on that. Secondly, to see the accurate, like, okay, what about this? You ever watch darts?
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know it's who the people are. I agree. But I like seeing human spectacles.
Cornhole's a spectacle now?
What is?
Cornhole's a spectacle now.
The ability for
that's a hot take, sir.
The ability for a human being to stand that far away from that tiny little hole in the board and to be able to toss this beanbag into that hole. Now, I know it's silly sounding because it is silly. Cornhole is a game you play in the backyard while you're pounding beers.
Yes.
I get it. But then you play it in your backyard, much like you'd play any other game. And then you see these professionals, which, and I love that it's professional. It's like Darwin Brinkley from Poughkeepsie, Oklahoma is a...
Poughkeepsie, New York.
Yeah, I'm also in Oklahoma, probably.
Probably.
He is a service counter worker at the local Napa Auto Parts. Like, they all have regular Joe jobs, but then they moonlight on the cornhole tournament. And to watch how they do this and how professional they are at what they do, I just like excellence. That's why I like eating competitions.
Do you watch bowling?
I do. Here's the thing with bowling. I don't hate bowling.
How are you pro cornhole?
I know,
anti bowling.
Probably because I could see cornhole being the bowling of the future, the same way where I'd get bored.
I think we're kind of there,
but it's just bowling. They're just like, hey, it's a strike.
Hey, you threw it in the hole.
It's a valid point. All right,
I'm just saying, there's not a big line of demarcation between bowling guy and a cornhole guy.
Crossover time for Jason, Doug, and anyone else who wants to weigh in. Good afternoon, everybody, and hope you had a great show. Today would be Prince Rogers Nelson's 63rd birthday. And whether you want to tribute him, honor him, miss him, I agree with all of those. But here's my question to you guys. When you think about Prince, there's nobody like him. There's never been anybody like him. And there probably will never be anybody like Prince. My question for you is this, whether alive or past, can you think of somebody else who pops into your head in music where you go, yep, just as unique, or we'll never see anyone else like them? I'm curious. Maybe somebody who's with us right now. Who would qualify for that? Happy birthday, Prince. For Jay, I'm Dave. See you tomorrow. Jim Rome is next. Bye-bye now.